Your name, please?
Dave Brubeck.
And your occupation and position?
Musician.
Mr. Brubeck, is music a luxury item for people, or is it an absolute necessity for their existence?
My viewpoint would be that it is a necessity. And I can't think of man, no matter how primitive, without thinking of him singing.
This is Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview with Dave Brubeck, who will reveal to you what he holds to be the responsibilities of his position in life, produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a public service by this station. Mr. Kennedy's guest today is Dave Brubeck, leader of the Dave Brubeck Quartet, Columbia recording artist, noted composer, and concert personality. Here is the moderator of the award-winning series Viewpoint, the Reverend Dana F. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Mr. Dave Brubeck, and thank you for inviting us to your home here in Wilton, Connecticut. What is it about music that's so important to man? Why does it spring up inside him?
Well, I guess it's as important as language. And from the beginning, man must have been singing or listening to birds singing and trying to imitate them. In fact, they say that the Chinese first developed a scale by listening to the birds and cutting bamboo pieces the length of the bamboo so you could blow into it and imitate the birds, and that's began the scale, the first time that we have that on record, I think. Even the American Indians, you know, communicated with tom-toms, and certainly in Africa that was a form of communication for years. Even our present-day army communicates different things by different bugle calls.
Does music have any force behind it that perhaps the spoken word doesn't sometimes have? Does it move people in a way that the spoken word can't?
Well, I feel that I have my own theory on this, that the heartbeat is the first thing you're aware of as a man. Even before you're born, you're aware of this from your mother. And this pulsating, steady beat by the average normal person, if your mother didn't have heart trouble, which must be over 99% of us had this steady beat, is kind of a necessity throughout life and something that makes us very attuned to music, to rhythm. And you might feel that it's the first thing you hear in life and the last thing you hear. When your heart stops, that's the last thing you're aware of. And it should be very rhythmic. In fact, I've listened to recordings of heartbeats, and even diseased hearts have wonderful rhythmic sounds, but the real pulse, the steady one, is the one we all prefer. But it's very rhythmic. It sounds very much like drums. And I think that this is so strong in our being from the time we're born till we die, that it is a very necessary thing not to upset it in too many ways. You can say, well, this rhythm is too exciting, or this disturbs me. I notice when we start playing polyrhythmically that an audience that isn't aware gets very excited, and maybe you can push them too far this way. And this is, I think, all goes back to that steady heartbeat that people are aware of throughout their life.
Is there any definite correlation between different kinds of rhythm and the reaction which they get as a response in people?
Well, not to seem too much of a mystic about religion, there are many instances where rhythm can upset the human mind to the point where people will pass out. And you'll read about people going into a state of trance. This is without drugs. I'm not talking about peyote and Arizona Indians and things where there are actual rites all involving rhythm and drugs and everything. I'm just talking about where the rhythm will finally get to a person in a state of frenzy while they're dancing. And it's not exhaustion from dancing, but the rhythm can reach the mind where it's just too much, and people will go into a state of trance and come out later. I don't think there's any harmful thing about it. But there's many cases recorded where people have heard drums and described it. This would be very complicated drum batteries, not just one drummer, but where there's many, many drummers involved.
Does it ever have the opposite effect of using rhythm to calm or to help people?
Well, then you get back to the heartbeat thing and get something very close to that, and that will definitely calm people. I've had a chance to use jazz in wards where the people were in a state of, they called them catatonic wards, where people don't even move for days at a time. And we made the experiment with some very well-known scientists. And in fact, Aldous Huxley was one of the people there, and Gerald Hurd, where we played jazz for people in catatonic wards. And it's the first time some of them had shown any movement and getting through so that they would tap their feet. For these people have been in this way, some of them, for years. This is the first thing that had gotten through to them. And this wasn't a physical, like going up and touching them or something. This was getting through with the music. Then they took the same record, made in the same hall, and everything the same, except we weren't there. And it was a tape, it wasn't a record. They played it, and it didn't get through. And this was in the stages where they were trying to find out if they couldn't get more people like myself to go to wards like this and play. And this was their way of proving to me. I would say, well, why don't you just use a record? Well, they proved to me that a tape or a record, although it's the same acoustics, everything the same hall, the same people, the same circumstances, the fact that you care enough and you're there, and it's another human being trying to get through, and not the tape. This is what's important. Of course, they started using music a lot in therapy, but that's been a rather recent thing. This experiment I'm referring to, we did this about 12 years ago, and there were things going on before that. I'd done other things, but never to actually tape it and see the different reaction to the tape.
You mentioned jazz. What does this connotate to you?
Usually when I hear the word, it connotates how backward the United States is.
Why do you say that?
Well, that's the first thing that flashes into my mind, the word jazz, is how it's been overlooked, how it has connotations that have so very little to do with it, how Duke Ellington and Stan Kenton and almost every other jazz musician wishes the word jazz didn't exist. And it also reflects the puritanical New England, which spread throughout the United States, thinking that anything American was wrong, and especially in art, that we could have a Charles Ives here in Danbury, Connecticut, that was so far ahead that he was ahead of Europe. He was ahead of Stravinsky and Bartok, and never be accepted in his own time. All these things, I think culture has come late to the United States, and we're still a very young country, and we're finally arriving. And the word jazz brings all that to mind.
What in its best sense would you like to see jazz mean?
There shouldn't even be the word. But, you know, because something has been done in history doesn't mean it's right. And when classical music stopped improvising, that doesn't mean they made the right turn in the road. The history of classical music made a big error that the jazz musician is kind of solving and bringing back is the feeling for improvisation. We've kept that alive. And because we improvise doesn't mean that we're any different than at what went on at one time in classical music.
When you say improvise, do you mean the musician sort of makes it up as he goes along?
Yeah, with great skill and understanding of music, he can make it up as he goes along. With great obedience to the real knowledge of music, and understanding of the rules of harmony. In other words, the jazz musician isn't this undisciplined character that the American public thinks he is. He's probably the most disciplined in his own way of any of our artists, because up until this point in history, the jazz musician has been a walking encyclopedia of the rules of music and what is accepted and what is not accepted and how to superimpose on what's gone before if he gets to the point where he's doing something new. And the American public really hasn't understood this. They've understood their baseball players. That's why so many jazz men had to go to Europe. The great Negro jazz musicians that weren't accepted in the United States were usually heroes in Europe. We're gradually getting over that now.
Then, Mr. Brubeck, as you look, say, at our own country and what it's willing to accept in mass, does this say anything to you about what stage of real culture we are in?
I think that we're in the best, probably, stage we've ever been, and it's sad indeed.
Well, where are we and where are we going as you see us, as you see it reflected in music?
Such a small percentage of our population really cares about ballet or the symphony orchestra or good jazz. I don't know the solution. All I want to warn people is that you can lose your freedom by having too much freedom. Freedom to play horrible music all day on the radio stations, usually. There's a few that try. Freedom not to program better on television. Freedom not to enlighten the younger people earlier. In a so-called primitive society, they grow up with this enlightenment. We must set up some ways that art is brought earlier to the young through our government, I think, without destroying the freedom of the artists.
Is there any relationship between music, rhythm, with an understanding of creation and of the earth, of God?
I would say that if I were going to find times when an artist, composer, any artist moved me in that direction, I would say it was in music, like Handel's Messiah, the Ode to Joy in the Ninth Symphony of Beethoven. I think that's the closest man has ever come to the creativity of a God.
What are the satisfactions, Mr. Brubeck, that you get from your work?
Well, creativity, I think, man tries to imitate God. And if you consider God the great creator, if you live a creative life in a creative field, this is your satisfaction.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dave Brubeck, for being with us and for giving us your viewpoint.
Thank you.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview with Dave Brubeck, produced as a public service by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church. Today's guest was Dave Brubeck, leader of the Dave Brubeck Quartet, Columbia recording artist, noted composer, and concert personality.